Chapter 4, The Shadow. All eyes immediately turned to look at Dodd when the pot broke. Sharp shards scattered across the front hall with a few smooth stones clumped around a pile of dried flowers. It wasn't until the mess filled the floor that it was apparent how small the flowers were compared to the massive pot. "I'm sorry," said Tritacello, beginning to apologize. "We must have..." "Are you okay, son?" interrupted Bombu, turning his full concern to Dodd's health. His cane shifted from one hand to the other before being placed against the wall. A crackling of debris on the stone floor echoed when Bombu took two feeble steps. He knelt down next to Dodd.
"Oh, he's been acting weird all day," grunted Dungo, making his way to the table. "Practically killed me twice in route. Why, I'd rather..."
Dungo searched for the words to say, but when he noticed nobody was listening, he stopped trying. Bowler's hunger took a back seat. "Is he all right?" he asked earnestly. "I don't know," responded Bombu. "I think he's injured." Tritacello joined Bombu on the ground. His strong arms carefully rolled Dodd over on his back and positioned him so his body was upon Tritacello's knees instead of the clutter. "It might be his stomach," he said, inspecting him. "He wasn't feeling well today. Ate sweets for breakfast and then complained when he got dizzy playing around on the wires after racing Dungo up the cliff. I gave him some coddle juice at lunch to settle things. You'd think it would have worked by now." "At least he's breathing," announced Bowler, pointing at Dodd's chest. He looked troubled while he watched Dodd's almost lifeless body being hefted from the floor by Tritacello. Dodd was carried across the room and placed in a woven double chair in the dining area. Bombu hobbled behind Tritacello with his cane thumping the floor. "Let's take a better look at him over here," he said, pointing straight at Dungo with his cane. "It's lighter underneath the kitchen table. Maybe we can slide it to the side and make room for the drip chair." Bowler didn't waste any time in responding, despite Dungo's grumbling about barely getting situated. Meanwhile, Tritacello carefully laid Dodd in the chair and pushed it right under the brightest set of hanging candle stacks. "That's better," said Bombu, moving to inspect him. Tritacello nodded in agreement. A sheepish grin crossed Bowler's face. He was thinking something funny and having a hard time holding it back. It wasn't his usual smile, because an obvious overtone of concern filled the room. Still, something had to be said or Bowler would burst. "It's not much to look at, but he's all we've got for dinner." Bowler thought it was humorous to have replaced the table of food with Dodd. A few grunts came from the corner where Dungo was busily stacking mounds of goose liver and cottage bread on his plate. His face cheered up with every spoonful he took. "Ah," moaned Dodd. He shifted around and reached for his back with one arm. "What happened?"
"You just broke Bombu's ancient Huda's pot. That's what happened," grunted Dungo with his mouth full of food.
Dodd blinked his eyes and searched the room. "You're still here," he mumbled sleepily. "Or I'm still here. I thought I was waking up. My back is killing me. It must be the position I'm in. I've got to move or I'll have such a kink that I'm sure to make a fool of myself at baseball practice. They'll probably kick me off the team this time." Dodd continued rambling while Bowler, Tritacello, and Bombu all listened. Much of what Dodd said didn't make sense to them. Baseball practice was something they'd never heard of before. And when Dodd spouted out that it was about time to wake up because he needed to leave in order to walk with Josh to his piano teacher's house, Tritacello joined the monologue. "Are you okay, Dodd?" he asked, gently placing his hand on Dodd's brow. "Where are you hurting?" Dodd looked up at the three and rubbed his eyes in disbelief. "It's probably pointless for any of you to help me," he said wearily. "As long as I'm in this dream, my back is going to keep hurting. It's the position I'm in, resting against the windowsill." Thoughts of a prior nap flooded Dodd's mind. He had fallen asleep on a couch next to Aunt Hilda, which seemed safe enough. However, after having a nightmare about being trapped in piles of seaweed, Cole had awakened to find her abundant hair flowing freely in his face. The threesome all looked confused. None of them spoke until Dungo managed to clear his throat of food in time to say the obvious.
"You're nowhere near a window. This place is more like a cave. So perhaps you're really dreaming if you're thinking there's a window around. Course, I just think you lost your freshy mind. Maybe the Swapper and the Dodd and you can't get along."
Dodd stared in amazement. "If I can't control this dream," Dodd muttered to himself, though everyone could hear him perfectly well, "I'll go along with it. Aunt Hilda will be noticing the time any minute. She'll come looking for me. She wouldn't want Josh to be late for piano lessons. It's about the only thing he does that Mom could be proud of. Dodd's babbling faded as he looked at Bamboo. It's right here, he said, pointing at his middle back. I'm hurting like crazy right here. Can you see anything? From the top layer, his deep maroon jacket appeared normal, but since Dodd insisted that his back was sore, they proceeded to help him take the cloak off. Underneath, reddish-brown stains covered his shirt and wrap. A hole roughly the size of a golf ball was torn all the way through, revealing a nasty wound that was clogged with leather and cloth. Dodd, you were hit during the attack, exclaimed Bowler. No wonder. That's why you jiggled around and had such a hard time securing the trilang for us. Why didn't you say anything? That looks like a mortal wound to me, gasped Tritacello, shaking his head. It seems to go really deep. Why, and all that blood? It's amazing you're still alive, Dodd. Bamboo poked with his pointer finger at the wound. Most of his finger disappeared inside the hole. Ouch, cried Dodd. Leave it alone. I'm just trying to assess the extent of the damage, insisted Bamboo. Then try harder to assess with your eyes, wailed Dodd. It really, really. Dodd's words trailed off when the arm he had been leaning on collapsed out from under him, and he fell flat in the chair. Still conscious, but seeing stars, his words slurred as he spoke. Please, help me, please. We'll do our best, don't worry, reassured Bamboo. We're right here. You're safe now. And I know of a person that can help you. She's the best in green. Dodd lay in pain for a long time with the world spinning. Bamboo's prodding had hurt intensely, yet knowing how bad the wound was seemed to make things even worse. Eventually, fatigued and confused, Dodd dozed off to the sound of someone chewing cottage bread at his side. Bowler sat on the floor, determined to keep close watch over Dodd, only leaving him momentarily to refill his plate until all of the food on the table was gone. Not a lot was said after Bamboo left the bungalow in search of medical help. Everyone was exhausted. The day's journey had taken a toll on their bodies, and Dodd's injury had dealt a heavy blow to their spirits. Tritacello ate a small supper and then proceeded to take the remaining drip chair in the corner as a bed. He was tall enough that his feet hung off the end. Under his head he placed his small bag, which held the triblot. It looked like an uncomfortable pillow. Nevertheless, with his hands tightly clasping it, nobody could take it without awakening him. Dungo managed to find a few hand-woven blankets in the closet. He placed them on top of a large grizzly bear rug near the grand fireplace. It made a great cushion to sleep on. Within moments, the grunting of Dungo's snores could be heard throughout the house. The bare floor wasn't very comfortable. Bowler shifted back and forth, but refused to leave Dodd in search of a better place to rest. He could see an old-fashioned plump bed on the other side of the entryway, tucked in the back of what appeared to be a guest room. The bed's size was considerable. 4 or 5 grown treaders could easily fit in it, or possibly a dozen kids. It looked soft and inviting. Bowler almost gave in. However, Dodd stirred in his sleep, which stiffened Bowler's commitment to endure a night of discomfort. All of the main candles had been trimmed down for the evening, leaving only a few smaller candles at the sides of the room and by the front door. Shadows danced on the walls when a slight draft made the lonely flames flicker. Things were seemingly at peace for the night, yet all was not as it seemed. Before dawn, Dodd was awakened by a strange feeling. His back still hurt bad enough that he lay motionless. Everything was quiet. His heart began to pound faster. It was as if an enemy was on the prowl. He felt certain of it. One shadow moved across the wall slowly, methodically. Dodd peered at it through his mostly closed eyes. His vision of the room around him was distorted. Still, he didn't dare open his eyes all the way, for doing so would reveal he was conscious. A quick story flashed through his mind. Every detail played out in a matter of seconds. The scene was more vivid than he had ever imagined it before. It was an account his grandfather had told him. In the past, Cole had wondered whether or not it was true. But now, as he lay in suspense, his grandpa's words came to life. Pap was on an adventure. The night was extra cold. The wind blew continually through the walls of the tiny log hut he was attempting to rest in. A handful of journeymen surrounded him on the floor. They were on their way back from accomplishing an important mission. Top secret stuff. Earlier in the evening, moonlight had leaked through a few holes in a corner of the roof, letting moonbeams dance on the walls. But not anymore. The world around them had become dreadfully dark. A feeling came pouring over Pap. His heart raced, and the little rough hairs on the back of his neck pressed straight out against the sack he was laying on. The purpose of the journey had been to retrieve a priceless gizmo, or at least that's what Pap had called it, and since Pap was in charge of the mission, the gizmo was stowed in his sack. Suddenly, through the darkness, a black wind blew. It chilled his men to the bone. From the first to the last, each journeyman arose and fell quickly at the hands of a silent enemy. Pap rolled across the floor with his precious cargo tucked tightly against his chest until he reached the back wall of the hut. He knew a cowhide bag containing hundreds of pounds of water was hung straight above him. It had been used to quench many men's thirst over the years and was currently stored indoors to aid traveling soldiers, who frequently had their tents pitched near the cabin. A taut rope rubbed against Pap's neck. It was the bottom part of a line which ran up to the ceiling, through a pulley, and then down to the water bag. As the dark enemy approached, Pap thought quickly and yanked on the knot which kept the container suspended. Crash! Crack! Plop! 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 The enormous sack fell to the floor, completely engulfing Pap. It was made from multiple thick hides, so the impact didn't cause it to pop, though it did knock the wind out of Pap and produce a cracking sound from underneath him. Immediately, he was attacked. He could feel the water sloshing as some beast bounced and clawed above him. The smell of rotting wood filled Pap's nostrils. Not all of the soldiers had been careful when getting water, so a portion had dripped and kept the wooden floor wet enough to decay. Pap dug with his hands, searching below him, and felt a break in the timbers. The impact of such a heavy weight hitting the rotten floor had broken three boards. Frantically, Pap worked the hole, making it larger, until damp, musky air wafted up. It was the smell of freedom. Pap's escape was not a moment too soon. As he clawed through spider webs and rat's nests under the cabin, a flood of water came crashing down. The assailant had successfully torn the hide bag. Pap slithered like a snake into the bushes surrounding the hut and then ran with the wind downhill. In the end, he was the only one of his party that survived. As Dodd lay injured in a strange cottage, he felt what Pap must have felt. Fear ran down his spine and made him shiver. What would Pap do right now, he thought. It was then that Dodd determined to take action. He decided that if he were to die at the hands of a dreadful monster, he wanted to at least see his attacker. He opened both eyes and strained to distinguish what was making the shadow. Dodd didn't see anything at first. As a matter of fact, the shadow had stopped moving or had completely disappeared. Dodd continued to lay motionless, searching each stationary silhouette on the wall. He knew one of them had moved in such a manner that it had to have been made by someone or something. Besides, the feeling of threat didn't go away. It just got stronger. The tension was almost unbearable. It was like knowing that a horrible beast was ready to pounce, and that it would pounce soon. The only remaining questions were when and from where. Based on the location of the wall where he had first spotted the shadow, Dodd tried to calculate where the creature was hiding. It wasn't easy. The few lit candles were spread out so that an object in one place could cast shade on the same wall as an object in another place, using the dim light of a different candle. The only sure way would be to see the silhouette again and then track the shadow's tail to its owner. Dodd's eyes searched the room. He even moved his head slightly to view the fireplace. In horror, he noticed his friends were gone. Where's Dungo, he thought? Where's Triticello? Where's Bowler? His eyes raced around to find them. Though Dodd had faded off to sleep in pain, he hadn't slept well, and so he had noticed with comfort over the course of the night the location of each of his friends. Now they were gone. Suddenly, Dodd saw the giant shadow reappear on the wall. It was enormous, and worst of all, the tail tracked straight to Dodd. Whatever it was, it had to be moving directly behind him. "I know you're there," said Dodd in a loud voice as he rolled toward the attacker. It took all of his courage and energy to face his assailant. Darkness cloaked the wall, hiding whoever or whatever had cast such a horrendous silhouette. Swoosh! A giant gust of air announced the opening of the front door. Dodd glanced to see who was escaping. However, the gust of wind blew so hard that it extinguished all of the candles in the house, rendering the surroundings pitch black. I'm as good as dead, he thought, wishing to disappear.
Bowler, could you come and give me a hand? Grunted
Dungo from the darkness in the entryway.
It seems we have a little problem here.
For a split second, Dodd almost cried out to Dungo for help, yet something held him back. Was Dungo just coming or had he faked an arrival? Did he really know where Bowler was? And if a problem loomed, why didn't Tretisello ask for Bowler's aid? Tretisello was always in charge. The feeling of fear continued. Dodd could hear his own heart beating in his ears. Please, Bowler, answer, he thought. But the house remained silent.
Hey, wake up. I need your help now, insisted Dungo. You have to come and show me those muscles you keep bragging about.
Still, no response. Tension filled the darkness like a suffocating fog. A strong wind was blowing outside, sending large gusts of air into the cottage.
Foom, 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 swack, thunk.
Something darted back and forth right over Dodd's face. I got it, declared Bowler excitedly. His voice was almost soothing enough to stop the pounding in Dodd's chest. There, and you probably didn't see it coming. When I told you I'd stay at your side, I meant protect you, not literally stay right at your side. Sorry if I scared you by not answering. A Venus is terribly poisonous and quite dangerous, you know. It attacks what it hears. Bowler made a fumbling noise in the blackness, and then there was light. The big stack hanging above Dodd glowed brightly, filling the room and beyond. It was now clear that Dungo was standing just outside the front door, propping it open with one foot, while holding something massive over his head with all four arms. Here, Dungo, let me help you with that, said Bowler, traversing the spacious kitchen. His long legs cut the distance to a few strides. Wow, what happened? I leave you for a few moments, and now look, you've got your hands full. Not to mention, it appears you've bitten off more than you can chew. Bowler laughed at his own joke. Dungo struggled to hold up a large branch that had blown down from the wind. He was losing his grip with one hand and had resorted to biting a smaller limb of the branch in an effort to reposition his slipping hand. It did look like Dungo intended on eating a gigantic side dish of tree.
Ha-ha, grunted Dungo sarcastically.
His faltering hand caught hold of the branch again and freed up his mouth for complaining.
We'll see how funny you think it is next time I leave the job for you to do alone.
Oh, it wouldn't be so bad, responded Bowler happily. Besides, I probably should be the one doing it, since the task looks like it's a man's job, not one for a little girl.
Yeah, I'm sure you would have done a great job, answered Dungo crossly. You'd have been the little crying girl trying to negotiate getting out of the cave with this branch firmly blocking the door. I'd have left it in place if it weren't for the nagging of Tretisello.
As Bowler helped Dungo to move the limb out into the forest, he could hear Tretisello greeting someone in the distance. Voices were distorted by the wind, but he could still clearly recognize Tretisello was in the group. They're coming, announced Bowler through the open doorway. He quickly turned and focused on the images that were gradually becoming visible. A taller figure was bending down to aid a staggering one, with a few other dots behind them. Dodd's mind, however, was too preoccupied by what he saw inside to care much about what was going on outside. As soon as Bowler had lit the lights, Dodd's eyes had found the Venus. It was a 12-legged black spider with a body the size of a dog. Its fangs extended like two giant hypodermic needles. Dodd couldn't take his eyes off of it because of the close encounter he had just endured, and once Bowler was gone helping Dungo, Dodd was paralyzed stiff, watching the beast. One leg kept twitching, and it didn't stop. Bowler, shouted Dodd. I'm glad you're done helping Dungo. Can you come in here? The Venus is still moving around. Dodd glanced nervously at the doorway and noticed, to his great horror, that Bowler had stepped out. Bowler! Dodd hollered, getting annoyed. He couldn't believe Bowler had left him alone with the dying Venus. Dodd shifted his weight and strained to sit up. With the change in position, he hoped to yell louder. Bowler! Dodd shouted. This time he yelled until his throat hurt. He felt like a baby crying to be noticed. It wasn't just the Venus. He was nearly delirious from pain. For a few moments, Dodd had concentrated wholly on getting Bowler's attention, but that was a big mistake. When his eyes drifted back toward the Venus, it was gone. A feeling of fear came flooding back. Instantly, more vivid than any childhood memory, Dodd recalled bits and pieces of an encounter with the Venus. It took no more than a second to completely fill his mind with the menagerie of pictures and feelings. The story was hazy, yet the information seemed to both frighten and comfort Dodd. A Bobwit family had settled down for the night. All five kids lay nestled in one plump bed. Suddenly, moonlight no longer seeped through the windows. Darkness filled the halls, kitchen, and other rooms. A child cried. With candles blazing, Mama and Papa came running. Other children began to cry. Then they were all crying. Fear was in Mama's eyes. Crack! Two venomous fangs penetrated the bedroom window pane. Everyone was running, but not Papa. He stood equipped with the strangest thing, something Dodd would never have imagined. Webbing was everywhere. Papa was darting, jumping, the Venus attacking, and then it was over. The memory wasn't much, just enough to bolster his courage. Dodd started to wonder how he had seen such a clear inside perspective on the incident. However, a noise from the corner of the room brought him back. Dodd spotted a leg. It was rising from behind a stack of wood by the fireplace. Its movements were cold and calculated, like the robotical approach of a humongous black widow. The Venus hadn't gone far. It brought comfort to know where it was, but that comfort soon faded. "It's coming!" cried Dodd desperately. He hoped Bowler would reappear with a stick to finish the job. The Venus climbed to the top of the woodpile. 10 of its 12 legs seemed to work just fine. One fang dripped a sticky liquid that hung in a glistening line. Now Dodd could see its eyes. Clearly, these weren't the eyes of a spider. They glowed red like two hot embers and were staring angrily at him. Dodd managed to reach down and untie one of his funny-looking shoes without ever taking his eyes off the Venus. It was almost instinctive. The laces were so long that they wrapped 5 times around his lower calf. Suddenly, the Venus made a leap upward. It was then that Dodd noticed how an intricate web filled the top of Bamboo's vaulted ceiling, up above the lit stacks. Webbing shot from the Venus and secured a line. Dodd's heart began to pound quickly. His pain momentarily dimmed from the bright light of imminent danger. He struggled to pull his shoe off. The force from tugging knocked him out of the drip chair and onto the stone floor. He looked up and saw the Venus positioning directly above him. Dodd glanced around, but there wasn't anything to hide behind. His legs felt like jello. One hand held his shoe. The other tried to steady him into a sitting position. He slipped on a pile of things that had fallen out of Bowler's bag. Dodd peered down and noticed that they were rocks of various shapes and colors. Without thinking, he packed his shoe while his eyes kept a steady watch on the Venus. Finally, as Dodd wrapped the laces around his hand twice, he felt as ready as the Bobwit father had been. With a makeshift weapon, it was time to break for the door. "If only I can get outside," he thought. "Someone else can worry about the Venus." But it was hopeless. No sooner did he rise to his feet than he found himself face down, seeing stars. He was dizzy and his legs had no strength. The shoe full of rocks thumped recklessly across the floor, extending Dodd's arm while cinching the laces tighter around his hand, blocking the circulation to his fingers. Dodd's nose ached, filling his eyes with water, enough that for a brief moment he lost sight of the Venus. Just then, a cold chill hit the back of his neck. It was the kiss of death. The Venus was upon him, and Dodd's futile efforts to evade the master predator were too little and way too late to save his life from the poisonous venom. "If I'm to die," Dodd thought, "I'll at least do it fighting." "Die, you wretched thing," Dodd cried as he rolled over and swung his weapon into the air. "Die, you putrid thing, die!" He felt it solidly connect. For a moment in time, everything froze. His eyes were too blurry to see. However, that didn't change what he knew. It was a hit. The feeling was unbelievable. It was a euphoric high like none he had ever encountered. He imagined that sinking his first home run in the last inning of a tiebreaker game for a championship couldn't possibly feel any better. And that's saying a lot for someone whose past best was making it to first base instead of striking out. "I did it," shouted Dodd enthusiastically. "I really did it." He felt a surge of adrenaline despite his dying condition. Dodd wiped the tears from his eyes and felt the back of his neck, expecting to find blood. But it wasn't red. The Venus hadn't descended far enough to sink its fangs into Dodd's neck. It was just a string of poisonous slime. The Venus was once more at the base of the wall where Bowler had left it. "Are you all right?" called Bowler from the front door. "I thought I heard you say something." Dodd looked up at Bowler with excitement and exhaustion in his eyes. "Would you please be kind enough to remove that thing from this room?" complained Dodd, pointing at the Venus. His voice sounded like a mother who was asking her son for the 100th time to do his chores. "Well, okay," said Bowler. "You don't have to worry. It's dead." Bowler entered the room and shook his head as he looked down at Dodd. "What happened to you? If you wanted to get up, you should have asked for help. Bamboo says your wound is bad enough that you shouldn't be doing anything right now." Dodd rolled his eyes. It seemed pointless to explain his triumph, since Baller was convinced he had killed the Venusian earlier. Dodd, said Baller, smirking as he bent down to help Dodd back into the chair. I think you have a rock in your shoe. Dodd chuckled. It was mostly a charity laugh. He felt too tired to be witty, so he simply said, That's what happens when you leave them on the floor. It made very little sense as a comeback, but Dodd was overly tired. He didn't care. Baller went on to discuss everything imaginable concerning his beloved collection of stones. He included a few jabs about the rock stinking from being stowed in Dodd's shoe, and the obvious jealousy Dodd felt toward him, as was apparent from Dodd's attempt to steal them. Regardless, it didn't matter what Baller said. With the danger gone, fatigue took over, and Dodd drifted back to sleep.